Welcome back, murder friends, to
Under the Influence of True Crime.
That's Em, and they're telling our story.
And that's Kate, and she's the only one under the influence.
That was a bold-faced lie. But you might hear some extra laughter over on Em's
We have a very special treat, because not only are both of us under the influence, we also have a special guest who's also under the influence. Allie, say hi. Hello.
Yay.
Allie is the one that I talked about before.
Allie is the boyfriend one that I threatened she in the room. Aggressively proposed to on the podcast. You guys heard the edited version, not the 10
You guys heard the
rant.
Edited version, not when I was like, Allie, you're going to fucking marry me. The boyfriend I threatened, though, was in the other room.
A white man? No!
We're going to see how off the rails this gets, because I've never been under the influence this hard. Especially not when I'm doing the story.
Buckle up, children. This can only go downhill.
Buckle the fuck up. But this is going to be a really rough case. And so I thought, like, if I'm going to be heavily under the influence for a case, it should be this one, because this one's rough.
I told somebody about your lasagna tattoo today.
What? What'd you just say?
You heard exactly what
did
I said.
Did you say lasagna?
I did. Oh, excuse me, your sonogram?
No, lasagna!
No, bro. Your sonogram lasagna.
Oh.
Anyway.
Someone asked me if this was a sonogram, and then another person asked me if it was lasagna.
So anyway, I tell people now, I'm like, oh, my friend has a picture, like, of lasagna tattooed on her arm.
But now I actually have mac and cheese tattooed on my arm.
No. Anyway, but I was telling a girl at my work about your sonogram tattoo and how everyone assumes that. I was like, it's the moon, fucking idiots.
Do we have any other business?
I don't think we covered any business to begin with yet.
Okay, so are you ready? You good?
Hey, Allie, did we tell the Best Buy story on the air?
No.
Do you remember the Best Buy story?
No.
Should we tell the Best Buy story?
Em bullied a Best Buy employee. That's the Best Buy story. All right, let's go.
I bullied a Best Buy employee for something that was Kate's bank's fault.
I thought you were going to say my fault. No, it was not my fault. It was like,
no, it wasn't your fault. It was your bank.
For sure. I'm with it.
Okay, so no, we didn't tell the Best Buy story on the air. But that's the gist of it, is that I made a Best Buy, like, I yelled at a Best Buy employee.
It went in, like, arms, like guns blazing, fists
I was
swinging,
ready.
Like,
I walked in, and the person who was there to greet me knew something was wrong and went, oh, I'm sorry, was there something I could help you with? And I was like, I need to speak to a manager now.
Okay,
I was
Karen.
A Karen. I know, I was a Karen.
Ew.
It sucks. And it sucks because I am a retail manager.
I don't
but
know if I can be friends with you anymore.
I drove 3 hours for something, and then they canceled it before I got there.
After sending us a confirmation for pickup.
Right.
That was fucked up.
That was fucked up. Anyway, oh my gosh. Okay, let's get into this case before I get too much off the rails. Are you ready? Last week, or I guess 2 weeks ago, whatever. The last episode was Kate's episode where she talked about Henry Lee Lucas.
That
and in that was Otis Toole. I also heard his name pronounced Otis. Why are you laughing?
Because that is Otis. Not how you say Otis.
It's Otis.
That seems
I funny. Imagine it's O-T-T-I-S.
Did you see that on Wikipedia?
No, it was My Favorite Murder in Georgia pronounced it as Otis.
But it's O-T-I-S. Why would she say it
it's
like
O-T-T-I-S.
That?
It's O-T-T-I-S.
No, it isn't.
So, yeah, it's O-T-T-I-S is how you is the actual like spelling of it. But I'm just going to call him Toole because, one, that's his last name, and two, he is a Toole. So, if you listen to last week's episode, you know that we talked about Otis Toole. Kate mentioned the Adam Walsh case, which Otis Toole was connected to. So, I thought it would be, in the most respectful way, fun to cover the Adam Walsh case.
Yeah. Okay. I'm excited in the most professional way. Yeah.
Okay, so you guys ready? So the trigger warning for this case is we are obviously going to talk about a child murder. We're talking about kidnapping. We are talking about missing children. We are going to talk about decapitation/dismemberment. We were also very briefly going to talk about sexual assault / sex offenders, just for a second. As we talked about last time, so this is the case of Adam Walsh / Code Adam, like why Code Adam was invented.
Yeah?
Yeah. Okay. Are you ready, Kate?
Super ready.
Okay. So Adam John Walsh was born November 14th, 1974 in Hollywood, Florida. He was the firstborn to parents John and Revae Walsh, which I really like that name.
That's cute.
Revae. Love it.
I thought you said Renee, and I was like, okay.
No, Revae.
Yeah.
There's very little information about Adam's first few years and how their family was, which usually means that if there's not a lot of info, that means they usually probably had a pretty normal family life. Mm-hmm. But we do know that Adam was actually known to be a pretty shy and quiet kid. The afternoon of July 27th, which I'm pretty sure is my parents' anniversary, maybe? July 27th, 1981, Adam accompanied his mother. Can you verify, please? Adam accompanied his mom to Sears, which was in the local mall, like how a Macy's is in a mall or whatever, you know?
Are you explaining what a Sears is?
No, I was saying it was in the mall.
I was like, does somebody not know what Sears is?
No, I was just explaining that it was attached to a mall. Is what I
understand. I'm sorry.
Okay. I was like, Adam was wearing a striped shirt, green shorts, and a captain's hat. Okay, so they entered Sears through the north entrance, and Revae was on the hunt for a lamp that she had seen in an ad. It was on sale. She wanted to get that fucking lamp.
Love that.
Relatable. Honestly, good energy. She's got a goal.
I know. So when they walked in, you know how used to there was even Walmart had it where you go in, there would be electronics, there would be video games on display and you could sit there and play it.
Oh, and you got to sit there and be like,
yeah, exactly. And you get a kink in your neck, staring 8 feet in the air at the screen.
For sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, because you're 4 foot nothing. Yeah.
Right. And so they walked into Sears and the brand new Atari 2600 was on display. It had just came out. Adam saw and was excited about it. So there was actually a couple other kids, teenagers, near it, playing with it. And so Revae let Adam go play with it. So he was going to test it out, which was very normal, especially
back then. I remember 40, fuck shit.
Right. Because even when I was a kid, which was 90s, early 2000s, my parents would let us stay at the video game display and let us play with it while they went around. It was nothing out of
ordinary. I can think of multiple times that your parents left you and me standing at video
game titles. Yes, exactly. And so Revae let Adam stay at the Atari display, and she was only a few aisles away looking for the lamp. Yeah. Roughly 10 minutes later.
Have we seen a picture of the lamp?
No, we don't know what the lamp looked like, unfortunately.
It just seems like the lamp was such a main character. We should have.
No, I can try to find the lamp. I'll search lamp on sale at Sears, July 25th. Sears lamp.
Yep. Okay, if you could. You know the area, obviously. Yeah.
We'll find the lamp. Don't worry. I'll find the lamp.
I want to buy that lamp.
You want to buy the lamp?
I'm saying, obviously, it's a pretty baller lamp. And then I wonder, did she get the lamp?
Did she get the lamp?
Because I'm sure she was focused on her missing kid, but did you get the lamp?
Did you buy the lamp, Revae? We need answers.
It was on sale.
It was on sale.
It was on
sale. Don't last forever.
You came to Sears for the lamp.
So roughly 10 minutes later at 12:15 p.m., she returned to the video game aisle and found that the group of boys was no longer there and Adam was not there either. So she found a store manager who told her that a scuffle or an argument had broken out between the older boys about whose turn it was to play with the Atari. And a security guard asked them to leave. The security guard had supposedly asked the older boys if their parents were there. All of the boys said, no, my parents are not here. So they sent them outside, and Adam was too shy to speak up to tell the security guard that his mom was still inside the store. and the group of boys, including Adam, left the store at the west entrance. And I think the initial reaction is to kind of get a little angry at the security guard for making the 6-year-old boy leave. But the security guard was a 17-year-old girl.
Oh.
Yeah, who had no business. Like, you just know she didn't have any kind of, like, it's not her fault. She was a 17-year-old girl. What
security was she going to provide? I'm not being rude. I'm not, like, I'm just saying, like, I don't trust anyone under 18 to provide security for anything.
Right. When you hear the story and, like, hear that detail, I think your initial reaction is to kind of get irritated or angry at the security guard, but it was a kid.
The security child.
It was a security child, for sure.
It was, like, definitely not a guard, because, no.
So, ooh. The security guard recalled kicking the boys out, but said that she didn't remember Adam being with them.
Yeah, because she was like, I don't think I fucking forced a 6-year-old to get out of a friggin' Sears.
Right, but also you're a 17-year-old kicking out probably other 17-year-olds.
You're probably friends with her.
Right.
Fight.
She's probably thinking it's like 17-year-olds and one of their little brothers.
Exactly. And because he was too shy to speak up and be like, no, my mom's actually still in the store. So Rave began looking for Adam throughout the store. And when he, really did look all over. She had him paged over the intercom every 15 minutes. They were paging over the intercom, like, Adam Walsh, please come up to whatever. Your mom's looking for you. I think we've all heard that, like, at Walmart or whatever. And so they were looking all over the store, but no one was able to find him. And actually, Reve's mother-in-law, John's mom, happened to be at Sears that day, and they, like, met up. She heard it, found Reve, and she also helped look for him. I didn't find any other information or anything about that. I just saw that in a couple articles.
Interesting.
They continued looking for Adam, and at 1:55 p.m., 90 minutes since Adam was last seen, they finally called the police. The search for Adam immediately began. Air and ground search parties were formed, but there was absolutely no signs of him. And for 4 days, they continued to look. It's worse than that, actually, because 4 days later, detectives claimed they were at a dead end and that the case was cold and that they didn't even want to look anymore. What? They said that they were at a dead end and that was all that they could do. 4 days, that was it.
I understand that the first 24 hours are, like, critical, but, like...
Right. Yeah.
That doesn't... Ugh. I can't.
I know. Family and friends set up a $100,000 reward for Adam's safe return. Do you want to take a guess at how much that is in today's money? $100,000 in 1981?
$500,000.
$300,000. It's just over $300,000. It's like $300,400 or something like that.
Oh, I went too high.
Yeah, yeah. No worries.
What did you guess, Allie?
$300,400. Yeah.
She was right on the money.
Damn.
No big deal.
So family and friends set up the reward, and the missing child's poster read, quote, "We are willing to negotiate ransom on any terms. Strict confidentiality. Do not fear revenge. We will not prosecute. We only want our son." Which breaks my heart.
I got little chills from that.
They just wanted their baby back. 16 days after Adam disappeared, on August 10th, 1981, two men who were fishing in a drainage canal in Vero Beach, Florida, which was over 100 miles from Hollywood, Florida, they found the decapitated head of a little boy floating in the water. Yeah. Detectives called John and Reve, who were actually at the time in New York because they were set to be on Good Morning America. They were set to go on to ask for more information. To just, like, ask the public to keep an eye on them, or for Adam, I mean. And so detectives called them to let them know that they had found a decapitated head that may have been Adam, and they had to make the very tough decision between going home to try to identify and see if it was Adam, or to continue and stay in New York City for one more night to go on Good Morning America to ask for any information. And ultimately they decided to stay and go on the air.
Oh.
Because even if it was Adam, they wanted to get his information out to hopefully catch the killer.
Also,
and they were obviously hoping that it wasn't Adam.
Like, there's not really anything they could have done if it was.
Right. I mean, even if they would have left right then, it still would have taken time for them to identify. It made more sense for them to stay.
Well, and it's not even and that. If like, it was Adam, it was still going to be Adam 2 days later.
Exactly. And this way they were able, and honestly, them and the fact that they ended up staying in New York and going on the show really turned this into a national case. I really don't think if they would have left, it would have not have gotten the attention it deserved, and it wouldn't have done so many great things, because like, as we'll get to in the end, like, Adam's death really like changed the way that cases like this were handled. So ultimately, John and Reve decided to stay in New York and go on Good Morning America to try to get more information. And so a family friend was sent to identify the head, and dental records confirmed that it was, in fact, Adam.
That's the worst.
You should not have to send a family friend for that.
No. And so the family friend did confirm that it was Adam, but dental records... and the family friend identified him because his two front teeth were missing. He was like, yeah, that's definitely Adam. And dental records was used to identify, yeah, it was Adam. But he was really only identified by one single filling, which a lot of kids had. It was like that back right molar that like a lot of kids have to get fillings in because of like they're eating candy or whatever. So there's actually a lot
was
of
was the head just like really... decomposed?
Well, the thing is,
like, why couldn't we, like,
water?
So it bloated.
Water makes decomposition happen rapidly. Like, it really speeds up the situation, and we'll get into that a little bit.
Okay. I forgot he was found.
So there's a lot of
fishermen found him.
Right. He was found in a canal. And so there is some controversy on whether or not it was Adam. I believe it was. But there is.
Do the Walshes believe it was?
Yes, yes. And detectives do too, but this case was also very mishandled. But the Walshes, the family friend, and the coroner all believe that it was him. So the rest of Adam's remains, because they did only find the head, the rest of his remains have never been recovered, and it's been over 40 years.
Oh, yes. What the fuck, man?
Yeah, that's awful. The coroner ruled, yeah.
That just made me think of, like, that brief moment, and I'm so sorry I'm about to put this in everybody's brains, but it popped in mine, and I can't.
Kate looks like she's in pain before she even says it.
It reminds me of when Otis was like, yeah, I was like a cannibal for some of my victims.
Disgusting.
But don't keep that in your heads for too long. We'll get into it. Hold on.
Okay.
The coroner ruled Adam's cause of death as asphyxiation. So he had received, as they described, as blows to his face, and his nose was fractured. So keep that in mind.
A little nugget.
I know. He was six years old.
It breaks my heart. Like, I don't understand how people can, like, attack and kill children. Like, that's, like, the most innocent little thing you could ever hurt.
So there are many theories about what happened to Adam. The suspect most people believe is Otis Elwood Toole, which, as I said, I'm not going to get into his backstory, because, one, he doesn't deserve it, and two, Kate did go over it. If you missed her two-parter on Henry Lee Lucas, if you missed her two-parter on Henry Lee Lucas, go back and listen to that, because we do talk about Otis Toole.
It's Otis.
Otis. It's in part two mainly. Listen to all of it, though. But if you want to go back and re-listen to part two, Kate does a wonderful job of going into Tool's background.
I'm blushing.
I'm not going to go through it again. He doesn't deserve it.
You don't get our energy twice, Otter Boy.
Exactly. He doesn't deserve it twice.
I called him Otter, and you didn't say anything. Not a flinch.
No. Mm-mm, I don't care. Fuck that guy. So if you want to hear about Otter's backstory, go back and listen to part two of Henry Lee Lucas, listen to part one too, just because Kate did such a good job. It does go into it. I'm not gonna say that Tool had a great childhood. He did not. Does that justify anything he did? Absolutely not. Once again,
plenty of people have shitty childhoods and are really good adults.
Precisely. You have empathy. You feel bad for the child. You have no empathy for the killer. And that's that.
And, like, so, at the bottom line, like, he did choose to kill a bunch of people. Like, he...
Exactly.
So...
Regardless of if he murdered Adam or not, he's a shitty person and he deserves what came to him. So if you want to hear more about his... Fuck him! If you want to hear more about that, go back and listen to Kate's episode. Tool confessed to the murder in 1983 after he had been arrested for previous murders. Once again, Kate does a wonderful job talking about that.
Okay? I tried to hold it in, and I was like, it's coming. Oh, Lord, she's coming.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay. No, you're good. Okay. So, Tool did confess to the murder in 1983 after he had been arrested, which he was arrested for previous murders, which Kate went into last episode. He claimed that he kidnapped Adam outside of the Sears after the security guard had kicked him out, and that he threw him in his car and drove off. He then says that, so this is trigger warning for this next little bit. He claims that Adam was crying for his mom, and so he punched him in the face repeatedly until he was knocked unconscious.
That's a little aggressive. Okay, so... Yeah.
Also, it's like he's 6 years old.
6 years old. Thank you guys so much for listening. That's it.
See you next week.
I don't want it.
He then says he turned off of the Florida Turnpike and decapitated Adam with a machete. Ooh,
for what? For what reason?
Because he sucks.
I don't get it. Like, why would you just, like you're like, oh, it's a Monday. Fuck you, dude. What?
Yeah. I know.
I'm fired up.
He claims to have buried the rest of Adam's body. And then, this sucks, guys. This sucks. He claims he drove around with his head for days before throwing it in the water because he forgot it was in there.
You did not forget there was a head in your and car.
One thing I didn't mention earlier is that after Adam's head was found in the water, it was said that he had been killed like a couple of days before his head was found. So yeah, do it that way.
What a fucking dirtbag.
So he claimed he drove around the head because he forgot about it for a couple of days, and then once he remembered, he threw it into the canal where it was eventually found. He did show police or lead police to where he claims he hid the body, but absolutely nothing was found.
Interesting.
Shocking. Very interesting, Otis, right? The liar lies about more things.
So Tool had driven a 1971 Cadillac, and it was taken by police when he was eventually arrested, again for crimes not related to Adam. And there was blood-stained carpet, like the seats had blood on them, and it did have a machete in it. However, when they decided eventually, you know, because, like, obviously in 1983, DNA testing was not available. Once DNA testing was available, they were, like, people, especially, like, John and Revay were calling for DNA testing. You know, police lost the car. It's just gone. Nobody knows where it is.
Walked away.
No one knows where it is. See you later. Bye.
This is why I hate the police, because we're like, hey, we really need you guys to solve this murder. And they were like, for sure. We lost the main thing, though.
How do you lose an entire fucking Cadillac?
Well, it's like, how do you lose, like, what lipstick in my Valentino white bag?
not only was, like, the only evidence completely missing, like, the only physical evidence that the police had was just gone, Tool also confessed. Right. He confessed and recanted his confession over and over and over and over.
He's also fucking a piece
human,
of shit.
Human dumpster fire.
And then he said that Henry Lee Lucas actually was there and was the one that actually decapitated Adam. However, Lucas was sitting in prison when Adam disappeared.
Doesn't add up.
Obviously he didn't have anything to do with it because he was fucking in prison.
How? Isn't Otis arrested before Henry?
Mm-mm.
In my notes, I had it that it was Otis, then Henry. That's interesting.
Well, one of us is wrong. Well, I'm pretty sure Otis had, like, been captured and released and then got rearrested, if I'm not incorrect.
Oh, okay. I didn't...
Someone else do the research for us and let me know. Even with all of this, John and Reve do believe it was Otis Tool, whatever.
I also believe it was Otis
Tool. Spoiler alert, I don't think Tool did it.
I'm excited. I do not think he did it.
Give us the facts, girl.
So, police said that Tool, in his confession, gave information that only the killer would have known. But, as we know from Kate's case, Henry Lee Lucas and Otis Tool were given case files to read. And then they would take the case files away and be like, so, was that you? And then they, since they knew that they would be getting special treatment if they were confessing to murders that they didn't do, they'd be like, oh yeah, I did this, this, and this, which they just read in the case file.
You can't also, see it, but I'm cheering wildly for Em. I was like, yes, truly. Yes, yeah.
So it's very, very possible that they handed Otis the file and were like, read this. And then they were like, hey, did you do this one? Can you give us any information? And he just recited what he just read.
And he was like, yeah, I can tell you about some of his years.
Right? And besides this, a made-for-TV movie, which was called Adam, premiered October 10th, 1983, and it went into a lot of detail of Adam's kidnap and murder. Hmm. And its first showing attracted 38 million viewers. And the very next day, Otis confessed to the murder.
There it is. I was like,
did Otis watch the movie, was given the case file, and then confess to it?
He just wanted to do a little research of what he did.
Wanted to do some research. Confessed.
Yeah.
He was like, this wow, isn't... that was crazy. Yeah, I did that.
Could be me.
Like, this isn't something new. Like, Henry Lee Lucas did the exact same thing where he was like, oh yeah, I totally did that one. Here's what happened, even though it was public information. Yeah. And they're like, oh, only the killer would know that this happened. No, you released that he had a fractured nose, which would mean that he was probably hit with some kind of blunt force trauma. Otis can take that and run with it and be like, oh yeah, he was crying for his mom, so I knocked him out. Like,
like, they say time and time again that the stories that they came up with to confess were so fucking convincing that, like, any jury would convict them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Just talk out their ass so much. I will say, though, have you ever heard Otis speak?
No. Have you?
So, like, a guy did an impression of it on, like, one of the podcasts I listened to. And he basically, I guess, sounds like he's like, I'm just a sweet southern little boy. Like, no, I'm just, like, it's so creepy, this voice that this guy did. I was like, that's terrifying. Great. So anyway.
If I can find a clip of him talking, I'm going to insert it here.
Okay, great.
If you didn't hear anything then, I couldn't find any. Okay.
So. You won't ever know.
So while I personally don't believe that Tool was the killer, there's not a ton of other suspects. But there is one conspiracy, and I'm going to say a name, and you guys are both going to be like, oh, that's stupid. But I have some stuff. Are you ready?
Yep.
There's a conspiracy that the actual killer is Jeffrey Dahmer.
Oh, that's stupid.
Thank you, Abby, for your participation.
I don't understand the thought process behind that.
here's the thought process behind that. Dahmer was reportedly living in South Florida at the time of Adam's disappearance, and three different witnesses reported a man matching Dahmer's description who was being real fucking creepy at the mall, because he was a creepy ass dude. Yeah, and three different people came forward after Dahmer was arrested for his crimes, and his picture was everywhere. People were coming forward and being like, I saw that dude at the mall the day that Adam Walsh went missing. One witness, one of those three, actually claimed a man matching Dahmer's description was dragging a screaming child out of the mall that day, and the child was screaming, "You are not my dad."
What a coinky-dink.
What a coinky-dink.
Interesting.
At the time, okay, this is, I'm sorry, this is hilarious. I had all intentions of finishing this sentence, but I apparently forgot, because the sentence reads as follows. At the time, Dahmer was working at, and then in parentheses, somewhere.
All right. Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
Six or fire? Well, I like both. I like both. I guess I like both. Maybe it is. Maybe it is. I'm what you call a maniac.
Anyway, there's a lot of interviews with him.
So at the time, Dahmer was working, I meant to put where he was working at, but in parentheses just says somewhere. So Dahmer was working somewhere where he had access to a blue van. Like, not just him, like, all of the workers there had access to this.
It was just him. They were like, all right, Jeff, here you go.
Only you, Jeff. And this van was reported as being seen at the mall that day by multiple people. Ooh. The van was also reported as being seen by two truckers very, very late at night near the canal, just days before Adam's head was found. And I got this, I had first heard this on My Favorite Murderer. Georgia was telling the story, but she had said that one trucker had driven by, saw this blue van down the canal, but its hazards weren't on. So it, like, radioed to the trucker that was behind him. He was about a mile behind him and was like, hey, look and see if you can see if this person needs help, because, like, I couldn't see anything, but if, like, they have a flat tire or they look like they're broken down, we'll turn around and we'll help them. So just let me know. Right. Second trucker went by and was like, no, I didn't see anything. Didn't look like they needed help. Their tire seemed okay. And so, but they did report it and said that it was seen, but they were never followed up with.
Interesting.
But yeah, actually none of the witnesses were followed up with. Like, the three witnesses who had seen someone matching Jeffrey's description at the mall had never been followed up with.
Why?
And police? I don't know. I would like to know why.
He just not outright say, oh, I did that. That was me.
Well, see,
that was me. I did
the
that.
The thing is, Dahmer denied his involvement completely. He literally was like, well, if I'm willing to confess to all of these heinous crimes that I committed, why wouldn't I confess if I had killed Adam? But as we all know, like, people who are child killers, child sex offenders, whatever, they don't do well in prison because, like, fellow prisoners don't take kindly to that.
He was already a sex offender and, like, a pedophile.
But not to six-year-olds.
What was his youngest?
14.
Oh, that does make a bit. Okay, I'll give you that.
Right. So this was really the first case of a child disappearance that really made national news. Every other time that a child had, like, gone missing or whatever, it was very local. So this was the first, like, national news. And this is when, after Adam's case went, like, I want to say viral, but, like, you know, in 1981, every family started having conversations about stranger danger, and that's really when stranger danger became a part of every family's conversations. Richard Morgan, who is a criminologist at Mount Holoke College, said, and I quote, the Adam case created a quote, the Adam case created a nation of petrified kids and paranoid parents. Kids used to be able to go out and organize a stickball game, and now all playdates and social lives of children are arranged and controlled by the parents. The fear still lingers today. So really, until Adam's disappearance, that wasn't something that parents had to worry about, you know? Following their son's death, John and Reve did, I mean, at least mine and Kate's personal favorite thing that all, like, victims and survivors do, is which is become activists. The Adam movie
and where your sentence was going for a second, I was like, oh, what is your favorite thing? And I was like, that is it.
Yeah, because we've talked about, like, when the family, like, of, like,
when they turn it around,
like the Maddie Clifton stuff like that, right? Like, they become activists, they, like, help people in that similar situation. So after the which we talked about, it was a movie, it was strictly called, it was the movie named Adam that had came out, which we talked about earlier, it had three different showings. It was aired three different times, and it would show pictures and descriptions of missing children, and they created a hotline for tips of these missing children, and 55 children were featured. I think that's a combination of all three showings, but okay. Of those 55, 13 of them were recovered.
Wow.
Which is a lot. 13 out of 55 children were recovered because they were featured at the end of this movie, which was just made for TV. And yeah, in 1984, Congress passed the Missing Children's Assistance Act, which formed the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Before this, before 1984, there was no national database for missing children, which just, like, seems crazy. Like, there were just kids, like, missing, and there was no place to be like, these are all of the kids.
They were like, that's fine, we'll figure it out later.
It's fine. The Walsh family is credited as being the biggest voice for getting this started, and they were also a huge voice for getting Code Adam in place. And Code Adam is a program which gives directions for what to do if a child is missing. In 2003, Congress passed a bill that says that every federal building and military base has to have a Code Adam program in place. And almost every retail store, department store, grocery store, hospital, amusement park, and museum also have adapted Code Adam. Kate, do you remember Code Adam from when you worked in retail? Like, do you remember the stocks?
No, I definitely, like, remember.
Don't remember.
Fuck off. No, they're in the bathroom. I was like, I read it like four times, so, and then I was
in the bathroom.
Like,
yeah. It's one of the first thing I teach my new hires.
Step one
is
call the police.
No.
Step one, okay. Lock all the doors. Nobody gets in, nobody gets out.
Kind of. Okay, so here's, for anyone who doesn't know, and this is, like, one of the first thing I teach my new hires, is Code Adam. So for those who don't know, if a child is reporting missing, the very first thing is the worker is to get a description of the child, what they were wearing, like how tall they are, what color hair they have. But the most important thing really is to get what shoes they have on, because, like, it's easy to change their clothes, it's a little bit harder to change their shoes. So after you get, like, I know at least in our store, after you get the description, your immediate response is to notify your manager. And then a worker is posted at each exit. An announcement is made to the rest of the store to let guests know that a child is missing. If the child is not found in 10 minutes, police are called. If the child is found unharmed and alone, they are reunited with the family. But if the child is found with another adult, every effort to safely delay them leaving without putting anyone at risk, the child, workers, whatever, is made. And then police are called with a description of the person that the child was seen with. So those are the basic steps. It kind of varies place to place. Like, for us, like, we're in an outdoor mall, so it's a little bit different for us specifically. In July of 2006, Congress passed the Adam Walsh Child Protection and Safety Act. And 2 days later, President George W. Bush signed it into law. This act created a national database of convicted child molesters and increased the penalty for sexual offenders against children, which still isn't enough punishment. No matter how much punishment they get, it is not enough.
Cut off their wings.
do it. But the Walsh family was present, like, in the White House for the signing of this bill to go into law.
That's fun.
So not only did the Walsh family commit to saving as many children as possible, John Walsh actually became the host of America's Most Wanted, which features some of America's most dangerous criminals. And I think a lot of murder friends probably watch this show, like, way too young, of John Walsh just, like, telling us the worst of the worst criminals, and we just ate that shit up. The show helped to capture more than 1,100 criminals, including 17 that were on the FBI's Most Wanted list.
Ooh.
Which is great, right? That's pretty cool. John later went on to host The Hunt with John Walsh and In Pursuit with John Walsh. I think in, like, especially the true crime community, like, the name John Walsh is very recognizable. Mm-hmm.
I'd say so.
However, John did find himself in a bit of controversy in 2006, which I'll get into a little bit more of a controversy that I don't agree with, but this one made me laugh so hard. In 2006, he said he wanted to implant exploding chips inside of sex offenders, and this is a direct quote from John Walsh, quote, "I said, implant it in their anus. If they go outside the radius, explode it. It would send a big message."
I like that.
I'm not saying
he's not wrong. No, I think it's hilarious. Anyway, besides that, John and Reve went on to have three more children, Megan, Callahan, and Hayden. Megan was born just 1 year after Adam's murder, and Reve told a local newspaper after the birth of her daughter, quote, "There is no substitute for Adam. Megan will make me miss Adam even more. He always wanted a sister," which made me tear up a little bit.
That's really sad.
And then, okay, so this is a quote from Callahan. He said, quote, "I grew up in a family that celebrated Adam's life. I knew his favorite sports and movies. We celebrated his birthday. I watched my parents channel their anger over what happened to Adam. To make sure that Adam didn't die in vain, they co-founded the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, a place where I work today. It's sort of my day job. It's an organization that has helped recover over 350,000 missing children. I grew up with my parents saying that if Adam's song is to continue, then we must do the singing. And I'm trying to do that every day as a child advocate. I want to help get families the justice they deserve."
Okay,
makes me want to cry. I know.
They sound like a really wonderful family. Jeez Louise.
So on December 16th, 2008, despite only having circumstantial evidence, Hollywood police, with John Walsh present, announced that Adam case was officially closed and that they were satisfied with Otis Toole being the killer. That's it. That's the murder and abduction of Adam Walsh and the creation of Kodan.
Holy crap. That was a lot. But you did an amazing job.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm impressed that I did it while so much under the influence.
Under the influence.
Under the influence
of true crime.
Of true crime.
I mean, there's no easy way to tell the story. And
No easy way to tell the story. We're absolutely not trying to make light of it or anything. It's just, it's easier to talk about it when
there's humor.
When it's not all terrible.
Yeah.
Right. Like, we're absolutely not trying to, like, humor the situation or humor the circumstances or anything. We're just trying to make it a little bit more terrible.
Unfortunately.
So that we can get stories out there. Exactly. Okay. That's all that we have for you today. I'm sorry that this episode was a little off the rails. It was a really hard one, though. And so I wanted to get through it, and I could get through it while under the influence. So.
And hopefully you guys enjoyed it.
Hopefully. If not, thanks for listening.
We'll catch you next time.
If you would like to see pictures from this case, you can follow our Instagram.
At Under the Influence of True Crime.
You can join our Facebook group.
At Under the Influence of True Crime.
You can send us an email.
At Under the Influence of True Crime. At gmail.com.
Unless your name is Tom, and then we don't want to hear from you. Yeah, you can also rate, review, and subscribe.
Anywhere you listen to your podcasts. They let you do that shit anywhere now.
Please do it. We really love listening to or hearing your thoughts.
We'll be your best friends.
Rate, review, and subscribe. Let us know. We will be your best friend, unless you want us to shut the fuck up, and then I won't say anything.
Well, like, add your names to our bio with, like, hearts next to it. It's pretty special.
Like, we're in middle school.
Yeah,
list we'll all of our date. Best friends in our bio. And you know what else they can do, Allie? You can join us right back here next week for some more spooky tales.
Yay!
Peace out.
Goodbye.
Bye.
I don't make the lesbian rules. The lesbian rules make me.